Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Right now, I want to break away for a guy who not only was the talk of conversation on this radio station for quite a long time, 16 years, and then some, actually. 16 years he played. This radio station has been around for 33 years. He's been a part of the conversation here for many more years than that, than his playing career. So a friend of the station and a guy who I got to know during 6 years covering him every day as a player and off the field as well, doing events for the Hillside Food Outreach and several other charitable events that Bernie Williams has taken part in over the years. He's got another one happening here, and he's kind enough to give us a couple of minutes here on a Saturday night. Bernie, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, sweetie, man. Great talking to you, man, as always.
Yeah, it's always fun to talk to you. I want to get into, I mentioned earlier that you were not only just the topic of conversation here, but you were actually caller to the fan. I'll get into that in a minute. But tell me what the Breathless Ballad Challenge is. You have an instrumental that you're asking fans to submit lyrics to, is that correct?
Yeah. In 2001, when my dad passed away, I made a song as a tribute to him called Para Don Berna. And it was meant to be an instrumental tune. I wasn't really good with lyrics, and I cannot sing. So I was just trying to convey all my emotions and all my gratitude to him at the time. The song has become, I guess, a little bit of the main song within this campaign that I have been for 3 years, called the Breathless Campaign, raising awareness for idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. This year, we have been, you know, obviously with the situation the way it is, we have not been able to fly, you know, the way that we have been doing the last 3 years, meeting with patients, meeting with doctors and caretakers, and really raise awareness about this devastating disease. So we came up with this challenge. But we're trying to put lyrics to this tune, and we're challenging people to submit lyrics to Para Don Berna. We're going to receive submissions of lyrics, and then we will pick one winner, and hopefully that person will be able to record this tune with some of the leading people in the music industry and try to make it a song with the lyrics. To even further commemorate, you know, the memory of my dad and further raise awareness for idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. So the website is breathlessballot.com, breathlessballotchallenge.com, I believe it is. Yeah. And, yeah, they can go in there and get some more information. Looking for themes, you know, my sentiment was just to kind of give my dad all the props because he was my hero. So we're trying to stay with this sort of hero theme. There's so many heroes now with this pandemic and all these, you know, turmoil that we're experiencing now as a country. There's a lot of people there that are emerging as heroes. So we're trying to challenge people to come up with their favorite hero and write a song about them and put the lyrics to this tune.
BreathlessBalladChallenge.com. And I'm assuming if they miss it there, it's all on your official website, Bernie51.com. Some links to stuff there. Hey, is this the song that,
before everything shut down, I got a chance to see you perform in Clearwater, and you performed a song on stage with your brother Hiram and your nephew. Is this the song that you played that night? It is.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bernie. Sorry, we had a little technical issue there, so thank you for that. Breathlessballad.com, and I was telling the people, this is the song you performed with Hiram and your nephew in Clearwater, correct?
Yes, I did. I made an arrangement for cello and flute. So it's guitar, cello, and flute, and that was the latest reiteration of this tune. Did a little bit of a counterpoint thing for my nephew, Jared, which is a jazz flute player. It's really, really good. He's down in the conservatory down in Puerto Rico, and has been really well received. I mean, it just kind of, all that emotion and all, you know, all that gratitude comes across, and it's always a very special moment in the show when I get a chance to play that tune.
Breathlessballad.com, and you can go submit lyrics to that. Bernie, I teased this before. You know, listen, one of the things they always tell players in New York, they say, don't read the newspapers. And by extension, that also means don't listen to the radio station, which, okay, I get why you wouldn't want to. But you used to listen to this radio station, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, on and off. I mean, when I was playing, I used to listen to it less than I do after I retired. But, I mean, after you retired, you're not really in the loop. You're not really under the scrutiny of fans and analysts and all these people. Then it becomes quite entertaining because you're talking about other people. You're listening to what the situation is. And it becomes quite amusing to listen about, you know, people talking about other players and you know, the whole drama and how the season develops and injuries and trades and things like that is really entertaining. So, yeah, I have become, you know, a little bit of a listener here and there, and also, you know, the fact that the WFAN has been so supportive of all my causes, whether it's the Hillside Food Outreach, that you have been a very important part of it, you know, over the years, or, you know, IPF, idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, you know, with you know, Mike and you and everybody at WFAN has been so supportive of my endeavors, and I really have a great deal of gratitude for you guys.
Glad to do it, and it's been wonderful to get to know you and the people that you're involved with and these wonderful causes that you aligned yourself with. But I vividly recall, and I want you to talk to me about what prompted this. This would have been, boy, I guess this would have been in 1999, leading up to the, was it after, or I can't remember if it was leading up to the World Series or after the World Series, but you called in to Mike and the Mad Dog, only you didn't call, you called the switchboard of the radio station, and they put you through to the studio, and you wanted to talk to them about the All-Century team, because as people were voting for Babe Ruth and Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio and Stan Musial and Hank Aaron and Willie Mays, you wanted to know why Roberto Clemente was not getting enough support. Tell me what you remember about listening at that time, making the call, and why you wanted to do it.
Absolutely, man. I think I was on my way to the stadium or something like that. I was 99. They were just selecting the old century team for major, you know, and it was actually really, really cool because I had an opportunity to go to Fenway Park for the All-Star game, right. And they had the All-Star game and the All Century team all together. I remember they brought Ted Williams in a wheelchair, and Mark McGuire, I mean Sosa, everybody was Pedro Martinez, and then the All Century team was there, and it was just an unbelievable place to be. But prior to them choosing that team, I was kind of like a little bit upset because my hero, Roberto Clemente, was not even in the conversation in those 100 best players in the history of the game. So I called as a fan. I said, hey, what's up with my boy Roberto? You know, what's up with that? And, I mean, obviously the debates, you know, and the discussion, you know, was about it. And, you know, you can have your opinions and everybody's entitled to theirs. But in my mind, Roberto has to be, you know, there, and they should retire his number as well. But that was the reason why I called, and then I started a whole slew of conversation about Roberto Clemente. So I started a little bit of a chain there, but I was glad that I was able to call and step in and for my guy in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, and that's what I was talking about. And I remember you talking to me in off season that saying you had listened to some shows I was doing or something like that. I mean, while you were playing, you would still listen occasionally. And I remember you telling me, you know, maybe not too much because, you know, you didn't want to hear them ripping on you, but you wanted to hear a little bit about what the fan out there was thinking about what was going on and in the sport you were playing, the game you were playing.
Yeah, I think it's really important to have a little bit of a pulse on what the situation is, you know, with the team. New York is very passionate about their sports and even more passionate about their sports heroes. And I was fortunate enough to play in an era with that Yankee team that, you know, after 96, we pretty much, it was a span of 10, 12 years that we couldn't do anything wrong. It was like we were in the, and with the fans too. I mean, 96, 98, 99, 2000, and 2001 winning again. By the time 2003, we were a little bit kind of like in the downside of that. And then they kind of came back together in 2009 and won it again, basically the same group of people without me. I was already retired in 2006. But, it was great to hear, you know, how, honest the fans will keep you in New York. You know, you have to play your best. They won't accept anything other than excellence, and you going out there and you do your job and playing 100%. And I think that was one of the things that I really take a lot of pride on. You know, when I was playing here in New York, I wasn't really volunteering any information to reporters or anything like that. But I did have a great deal of respect for the profession, and I knew that it was just obviously a job that everybody in the media has to do. And it was just basically the mediator to the fans and the voice, all the questions that the fans wanted to ask, you guys were asking us. And I sort of kept us honest and playing at the level that we were able to play for that many years. And I think it was a good thing to be playing in New York and knowing that every little thing that you did was going to be accounted for, and I just kept you honest.
Yeah, and I don't think it was always about giving up information, but it was about providing some perspective. And as you said, connecting yourself to the fans. And I think that's I always think that's important to have the fans hear your words exactly. But it created, crafted through the stories that we're able to tell. And I think that's what makes the good mix when you're talking about reporters and fans trying to get the story out to the player. But, what you're talking about and being able to put all that together and thrive in these conditions, we're at the 20th anniversary, and I think there was a special on Yes about a week ago. Joe Torre was in it, and I don't remember if you were part of it or not. I was actually on the air against it, so I didn't see it. But it's 20 years since the Subway Series, which is the height of all of this New York fandom coming together. What do you remember about the buildup to the Subway Series after you and the Mets had kind of teased everybody for a couple of years with these great interleague games in the regular season, and all of a sudden here it is, 2000, you're playing for the World Series in your town without having to leave city and have all of it explode right here. What do you remember about that buildup?
Well, I have to go a little bit back to 1989 when my first actual Subway Series that was a game that was played in New York between the Yankees and the Mets every year to kick off the season.
Yeah, Mayor's Cup, Mayor's Trophy game.
Yeah, the Mayor's Trophy game. Those games, I was sort of disappointed in 89 when they decided to not keep me on the team and let me sort of keep working my way up through the minor leagues. And it wasn't until 1991 until I became, part of the team again. I remember Mr. Steinbrenner, very, explicitly saying, there's a few teams in this league that you, but under any circumstances, cannot lose to. And obviously the Mets was, one of them. Obviously Boston and then Tampa Bay. But the Mets was always, there's always this rival with them, trying to get, the front page of the paper and trying to, get all the attention away from them. And I think, our owner, Mr. Steinmeier, took it very seriously, to you know, to beat them anytime, even in spring training. We were not allowed to lose to them, though. It was just insane. So fast forward 2000, and actually you get a World Series. You know, the whole baseball world stops to see the two local teams in New York duke it out. And I remember, you know, vividly just talking to Derek, and Derek actually making comments, Derek Jeter, about how, you know, in his building, he was just, he would never be able to live in the building again if they could have lost to the Mets. Everywhere you went, you know, supermarket, you know, restaurants, you know, everywhere you went, music store, it was all about, they were talking about that and saying, you know, how are you going to do, and this and that. And it was, there was a lot of pride involved in that series, man. And the best part of it was that we didn't have to travel. It was all between Shea Stadium and Yankee Stadium. And I remember them closing the, you know, like closing the freeway. I mean, it was like, I don't know which one it is, you know. They were close the pathway from Yankee Stadium to Shea Stadium, gave us a police escort back and forth. And, it was just an event. And I will never forget it. You know, the fact that we came on top and we won at Shea Stadium when Mike Piazza hit that ball out of Mariano, I thought he was going to be gone. But then it, for some miraculous reason, stopped and I was able to catch it. Coming on top in that series, certainly one of the top World Series that I was involved in, and I got a lot of fond memories about it.
I love talking about this one specific moment to people, and I've spoken to you about it off the air, I think. Last hour, Dave Rigetti was on, and I just remember I asked him about the final pitch of his no-hitter. And I love taking you guys back to certain moments and wondering if you can physically still feel yourself in the moment all these years later if you close your eyes. Catching that final out, can you still close your eyes and feel the ball hitting your glove clinch the final out of that World Series?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was one of those moments that I will never forget. I mean, I remember the count. I remember the jerky motion that Mariano did, you know, when Mike hit the ball. I remember thinking, oh, God, we're in trouble. Running right to the fence, as we were instructed as major league players and professional players, go to the fence and then make your adjustment there. Halfway there, I looked up, thinking maybe I should take a look, you know, to see where this ball is going to land. And like I said before, miraculously, it said it started dying out, and it's not going to go. It's going to stay inside. I'm, like, camping under it, catch it, and said, do not drop it. Do not drop it. Once I caught it, put my knee down, thank the Lord, and then the rest was history, man. I don't even remember anything that happened between the time that I caught the ball and carrying Joe Torre out of the field, you know, off the field. I don't remember what happened. I just remember it was just absolutely great and just a perfect moment to cap off our season. Just great memories, man.
Bernie, we're talking to Bernie Williams. You know what my favorite part about that play is? Coaches always talk to me about, you know, people's responsibilities on the field. I love talking about defense with coaches, and they tell me basically, you know, when a ball is hit, everybody's got somewhere to go. Everybody's got something to cover no matter where the ball is hit if you're doing it right. Well, in the video that they show at Yankee Stadium that has Paul O'Neill and the Warrior playing in the background, they show all these great moments, but they show O'Neill celebrating that final out against the Mets. And you know what he's doing? As the ball is settling into your glove, he is standing there in right field. He hasn't moved a step. He's literally standing there with his hands
his
hips.
There's not going to be any backup here. He's going to be a triple here.
Exactly. I loved it. In the celebration of the Warrior, the ending shot of him is throwing his hands up in the air when he hasn't moved one inch from his spot as that ball is hit into the gap.
Yeah. Yeah, he went from like, oh, God, to like, yes, we're done. Let's celebrate. Yeah. That was a magical moment, man.
And obviously the fan reaction during that time was crazy. You know what we're dealing with now, and you know that there's not going to be any fans in the ballpark, at least not for the foreseeable future. And I remember asking you, you're a guy who got a lot of curtain calls after a lot of big home runs. And I remember asking you one time about what that moment felt like, and you described it perfectly to me as all the fans in the building trying to show you their love all at once. And it was just wrapping you up in this emotion all in one tiny second from so many different people. And I thought it was a wonderful way to describe that, but there aren't going to be any moments like that now. I'm curious what you think it's going to be like for players to try to generate the excitement and enthusiasm night after night if they're able to get this thing started and play 60 games and not play them in front of fans.
Well, I think it's going to be really difficult, especially in the playoffs, because, I mean, it's very hard to match that electricity in the air, that emotion, you know, that, you know, butterfly in your stomach, you know, to see the stadium full capacity and feeling that energy. I don't know what to say, man. I think it's going to be really difficult. You know, the games in the regular season, you know, are great, you know, every single one of them. But once you go into the playoffs, you start thinking, hey, we're playing for something, you know, something special here. And a lot of that experience, to me, it was, even though I try to play it cool and try to, you know, not really have any interaction with the fans, you still feel it and you still feel the energy. And you'll be not, you know, you wouldn't be human if you didn't. So I'm curious to see, you know, how the players are going to react to that and still be able to be pumped up and, you know, have, you know, that experience be a memorable one. I think it's going to be a lot harder to get pumped for that.
Yeah, it's. I just think it's one of the interesting aspects here. And I heard somebody say today, you know, it after a couple of games, I think Buck Showalter said it actually earlier on the station. He was talking with Bob Papa and Carl Banks. He said, yeah, after a couple of days, that novelty of playing without fans is going to wear off, and players are going to have to find ways to get themselves energized for these games. It's really not that easy, especially when you're used to doing it in front of a full house every night.
Yeah, I mean, even in spring training, I mean, the Yankees are notorious for having spring training, you know, you know, like full houses, you know, yeah, like sellouts, and not even a spring. It doesn't even gonna. I don't think it's even gonna feel like a spring training game. You know, it's gonna be very interesting. But you know, the professional players, you know, they're getting paid to do a job, and I have, you know, a lot of confidence in especially my Yankees that, you know, they're gonna come together to start really, really quick. You know, this is gonna be a quick start for the team. Whoever comes out, you know, the first, you know, 30, 40 games, you know, having that streak is going to have a better opportunity to do something special this season, this shortened season.
A couple of more for Bernie Williams, and we'll get to your phone calls a little bit later. 877-337-6666. Sweeney Murdy here till 11 o'clock. Bernie, the guy that's manning center field these days is Aaron Hicks, and you know he's been slowed by injuries quite a bit over these last couple of years. But when he's on the field, I've said this many times, I see flashes of Bernie Williams in Aaron Hicks's game. Switch hitter with power, good defender. I think we can both agree that he has a much stronger arm than you ever did. But I feel like...
Yeah, that was going to be my first comment.
I feel like when I watch him, I've said this before, he has days and weeks where he looks like you. The difference was you had months and years like that. So obviously, I'm not trying to put Aaron Hicks in the same breath, but do you see what I'm talking about when you watch him play?
Well, I know him, and I mean, I have, you know, plenty of conversations with him about playing the game, and I like him a lot, man. He's a hard worker. You know, unfortunately, you know, the injuries, you know, have plagued him, and haven't had an opportunity to show all he can do. I believe that he could be a difference maker, you know, in a game. He could probably carry a team for a week or two, the same way that I used to, you know, do, you know, with, you know, all the players around me, you know, like relying on everybody. He's that type of player, you know, obviously a stronger, a better arm than I did. I kept pulling them for 16 years, but, he's a great defender. You know, I was just watching, Yes Network, you know, they had they were showing a game in Minnesota with what he did. That game-saving catch to end the game. It was just an unbelievable play. I just hope that he can put all these injuries behind him and put a you know, full season together to show people, you know, everything that he can do on the field.
So, Bernie, what are you listening to these days? What catches your ear? What do you have on loop? What do you like to hear?
Man, I've been very eclectic, man. I'm from like Wayne Clancy to Twisted Sister to Rachmaninoff and everything in between, man. Like Duke Ellington said, man, there's only two kinds of music. Good music and the other kind. So I'd never really close my ears to anything new and exciting. There's a lot of exciting people now in the music scene, and just trying to make my mark, you know, as well, you know, as all of them are. It's a really interesting period of music now.
I've probably told this story a couple of times, but I love that, you know, I tried to turn you on to somebody one spring training. I'd gone to see a band over in Clearwater, same place that you guys played, actually. They were Los Lonely Boys, and, you know, they've made a few albums back in the day. They hadn't quite hit it. They were opening for George Thorogood, and I came back the next day, and I said, hey, Bernie, I think you might like these guys. You should look them up. And you kind of said, yeah, okay, and you walked away, and I'm thinking, you know, like, you know, Joe Torre's made this joke plenty of times. You know, that's Bernie being Bernie. I felt like whatever I said went in one ear, out the other, and then somewhere in between it got lost. Well, about four or five, 6 months later, I'm walking out of Joe Torre's office after a post-game session, and you're on your way out the door, because that's where the exit is, right past the office. And as I'm going this way, you pass me, and all of a sudden you say, hey. And I turn around, and you're holding up the Los Lonely Boys CD. And you say, good call, man. I'm thinking, wow, he actually heard what I said, and he remembered. That's crazy.
Yeah, man. Yeah, of course. Of course I did, man. Yeah, I take your opinion in music very seriously. You have similar taste, and actually, as a matter of fact, we were going to go to a concert in Tampa.
Yeah.
Before this whole thing exploded, and then, you know, it kind of fell through the cracks. But I was, you know, kind of looking forward to seeing a group that you were actually interested in, and I was like, wow, man, I'm looking forward to that, man. But hopefully, it will happen.
I hope so. Brian Fallon is a wonderful artist, and his buddy, his old bandmate, Benny Horowitz, is a big Yankee fan, a big fan listener. Brian Fallon is a terrific musician. He's put out a couple of wonderful solo albums, and he was with Gaslight Anthem before, but he's put out a couple of magnificent solo albums, and he was playing in Tampa, and a night that I had free, and Bernie was in town, and we were going to arrange to go. And I was actually going to try and see if he could invite you on stage. You get yourself a little just a little walk on with him. But as we said, the concert got canceled. Maybe you, me, and Brian can all get together again at some point when this whole thing settles. It's been crazy. Have you gotten through this okay? How have you been? How are your kids?
Yeah. Everybody's doing well. You know, thank God. It's been really, really crazy. The interaction, all that stuff, you know, all these guidelines and all, you know, like, you know, lockdown, not lockdown, not being able to go to the music store to jam. It's been hard. I'm certainly optimistic, you know, that slowly but surely we're going to come out of this on the other side and be stronger than ever before. And it'll be, you know, a lot of lessons learned from this experience, but I'm staying optimistic about it.
Bernie, listen, thanks for all the time. We're going to go to breathlessballad.com, and you can submit lyrics to the song that Bernie wrote for his dad. And I'm sorry, the name again is what, Bernie?
Para Don Berna.
Para Don Berna. Thank you very much. Yep. And I hope everybody gives it a chance. Breathlessballad.com. And it's a magnificent instrumental. And hopefully you get some good submissions to it. I'm looking forward to seeing what you come up with. And once again, I can't thank you for all the years. Like I said, we've been on the air for 33 years plus 3 days. You're 16 years playing here. You were a big part of the conversation. You've been a big part of our radio station, even in the years since then, playing at different events for us, and we've kind of co-sponsored a couple of things and helped promoted a few different things, and really look forward to another, I don't know how many more years of doing this, because you're a fabulous musician, and we always love seeing you, hearing you, and can't wait to talk to you again, see you in person. Bernie, thanks so much.
Absolutely, man. Congratulations on all those years, and you guys have been part of the fabric of this town. So keep up the good work.
We'll see you again down the road soon, Bernie.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much, Sweeney.
That's Bernie Williams, number 51 in your programs, and he's been a big contributor to our programs here at the Fan for many years.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.